Well, a big thank you to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, July 21st, and you are listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
And coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Shane McGrath and Niall Moran reflect on Tipperary's turnaround as the Liam McCarthy returns to the Premier County for the first time since 2019. Alan Cawley is with us to chat soccer, while Stephen Ferris will discuss the Lions' win against the Wallabies on Saturday morning and look forward to their game tomorrow morning. Plus, we'll debate our weekend sporting highlights. Well, myself and Shane will, and Alan will probably debate his lowlights.
He's good for something, Ruby. Don't you worry. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at Game On 2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
You made Alan Cawley have a massive smile on his face before we even went on air, Ruby. Before we even got into the nuts and bolts of the show, Ruby.
So I just knew without talking to him, Shane, right, that everything that went on over the weekend, Cawley would definitely find an angle that was
to bring it down. Way,
to bring it down a level, yeah.
This man has been making me smile for years, sitting on horses, and now he's making me smile across a microphone, Shane. But no, I'm full of the joys of life tonight, Ruby, because what a weekend. I have no lowlights, only positivity. I watched the best soccer match that I've, one of the best I've ever seen Saturday night, and I was lucky enough to be working on it in the Women's Euros, France and
was
Germany.
Was it really a red card for pulling her hair? She only half tugged on it now.
Well, it's the rule, I think.
Yeah.
It's the rule in the game.
Didn't someone pull Cucurella's hair, I think, in the Club World Cup as well? So yeah, it happens across the sport.
Are we diving straight in? This is my highlight. Yeah, I'm straight in.
Well, listen, 51552. I want to hear plenty of highlights here, and I think this is going to be probably the theme of today. Hi, gang. Happy Tip Man here. Still in shock at yesterday's result, or more the manner of it. Could add Cork's second half performance to the inexplicable mystery of the third secret of Fatima and Christy Moore's lyrics of how your man stayed up on the surfboard after 16 pints of stout. Unreal stuff, says Kieran and Baris O'Kane. Tip.
If he's still in shock, the whole of County Cork are too.
Yeah, but that's very true. That's very true.
Well, I will throw in a little low light when we get to it as well. But
of course, yeah.
I told you.
Of course, you we're on air. We're on air, four minutes.
But it's more me posing a question and putting it out there, and okay, to our listeners as well.
Okay.
But I'll keep the positivity going first.
Go on.
So Saturday night. The game, France and Germany.
Yeah.
We're down to the business end, the heavyweights in the quarterfinals of the Women's Euros. And this was the heavyweights of all heavyweights slugging it out for 90 minutes,
yeah,
an extra 30 minutes, penalty shootout. It had everything, Shane. It was unbelievable. And the Germans, who you just can't write them off, as the cliche goes.
Yeah.
They were down to 10 players after only 13 minutes, as Ruby alluded to there. Hendrick was sent off for pulling Mbappe's hair back. So yep, she's sent off. Then they concede a penalty. So they're one down. You're thinking France, who were playing really well. I think they're on an 11-game winning run as well. So they're playing really well. You're thinking the Germans are up against it here. But talk about fire and passion and fire in the belly and all those things that we've seen from a brilliant Tipperary team yesterday. It was all there to see with the Germans. And they scored soon after, which helped them. That was a big thing because they weren't behind for too long. So once they got the equaliser, Nusk and a great header, they had something to hold on to, and Pfeiffer.
Mm.
And by God, did they fight, Shane. It was unbelievable. They ran themselves into the ground. Then we get to 90 minutes to survive.
Sorry, hold on. I'm sorry. I was letting you speak there for about 90 seconds and you've already got to the 90-minute mark.
Yeah, because I'm trying. I'd be here and all night if I go through the game.
No, sorry. Are we getting to name a certain goalkeeper here? Are we getting to that point?
Oh, yeah, we're coming to her.
Okay, she's the highlight. Right, okay.
She is the highlight.
Sorry, that was an extra time. That's fine.
It was an extra time.
That's fine. Once we're getting there.
She had a great game before that as well. But then we get to 90 minutes and what had me baffled as well, he made no substitutions. He made one. So they're on their feet, literally on their feet,
yeah,
the players. And the effort they were putting in was unbelievable. So get to the 90 minutes. They survived 1-1. Played really well. They had missed a penalty themselves to win it in normal time as well, the girl who scored. But extra time, played out like most extra times. They were out on their feet, both teams. But one incredible moment, Shane, that you obviously love every bit of. Catherine Ann Berger with one of the saves of all time. It was unbelievable save. I don't know how she...
One of the greatest saves in association football.
It was incredible.
Catherine Berger. The determination, the flexibility, the movement and just that sheer desire to lunge at the ball and be able to Gordon Banks, David Seaman. I think Lloris had a great one. That was down to his right more so. But just that little... What amazed me about it,
so she anticipated a cross.
Yeah.
So she's heading out towards to get the ball. So she gets to a about the 6 yard box. All her weight is going that way. Then she had to swivel around and then she dives from halfway inside the 6 yard box to just get to it, claws it out. So that was unbelievable. Then we get to the penalties. She saves 3 penalties. Then she steps up and scores a penalty. This girl can do no wrong. Katrin Ann Berger, Ruby.
And Katrin Berger. And Katrin.
Ann Katrin.
Ann Katrin, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Ann Katrin, Katrin Ann, it's all the one. She's unbelievable.
You'll address her by her proper title, Colin.
Well, I was calling her Berger all night. But she was unbelievable. She was absolutely unbelievable. And this is a girl who's fought back from cancer twice as well. So she's had incredible backstory. And I'm with the Germans. I'm all in with the Germans now. I'd love to see them go on and win it.
I'm an Ann Katchenberger hipster. I remember when the WSL highlights were on of a weekend evening and you'd be watching. I was like, jeez, that keeper looks half decent. That
she's very good.
Half decent.
34.
And now look at her. Now look at her.
So that was my highlight.
You have a good eye for talent, Shane.
I do. I tell you. And she had a bit of criticism from the last day out as well. So she'd overcome
that. She was
poor
the last day. Yeah, she was.
So understandably getting criticised. I had to overcome that as well to put on that performance.
But they were brilliant. And it's unfair to pick at one player. Every one of them ran themselves into the ground. I never seen a performance like it. It was phenomenal. So that was my main highlight. And I have to give a big shout out off the back of the game yesterday to Liam Cahill, because I think after all that he has gone through last year, criticised, for him to bounce back and put on a performance to the players, what they did for him yesterday and the way he carried himself throughout it all as well, I thought it was unbelievable. And I was delighted for Tipperary.
Your sporting highlight, Shane?
Well, I have Ann Katchenberger's extra time save up there. I also have a whole stuff. I was flicking through LOI TV, the cup matches were on at the weekend, and albeit now all the League of Ireland sides absolutely demolished the regional or divisional teams, whatever way you want to phrase it, it was a bit one-sided, but some of the saves in the League of Ireland, I have to say, was drawed against the Crumlin United keeper. They pulled off some fantastic saves. Now, I won't mention the final scoreline. He did concede a few, but it was brilliant. My highlights surrounding goalkeepers, also the Dublin ladies footballers. They went to extra time. Carla Rowe's back heel, yeah. I suppose, was absolutely...
Some flick, wasn't it?
It was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. Before that, I had noted down, I had my notes out on the phone, and I was writing down what the highlights were going to be. And that Hannah Tyrrell. So Hannah, she scores a penalty. A woman who's won an FAI Cup, played for the Irish rugby team, has a list of honours, and now an absolute Dublin stalwart. Final season in a Dubs jersey as well. Free to take it to extra time. And then clutch moment, upsets Hannah Tyrrell. Takes the free, earlier scored the penalty, and then only to be outdone by that back heel from Carla Rowe, which was absolutely outstanding. So between the Dublin ladies footballers and Katchenberger, a couple of other saves as well thrown in, and maybe Rory's Saturday round and Shane Lowry's closing round were notable.
And Scotty.
Scotty, see, this comes back to the debate we had the other week about David Clifford not getting the man of the match.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, that's Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah.
It's what he does.
I wanted to ask Ruby this last week when we were on that, and Ruby, answer me this. So we were discussing Clifford last week, the man of the match thing, and Sean Kavanagh made a what I thought was a really good point to the other lads in not giving it to him, and he was basically saying that you take him for granted because you see him so often. And I was thinking, because you won a fair few races in your time and were fairly successful. Did you ever feel a time when there was awards being announced or things, praise going, and because you won so much, they were kind of going, oh, well, look, he wins an awful lot, we'll give it to someone else?
Well, this is Ireland, so of course that happens. But does it bother you? No, I don't think it does. I'd imagine, to me, it was always when I walked out of the race course, I didn't worry about what other people thought. It was what I thought of how I had done that day. And I have a funny feeling Davy Clifford probably thinks pretty much the same. Kind of hope Scotty Scheffler thinks that way, because it'd be great to think like he thinks. But that's the way I thought. So for me, it was how I thought I had done that day, more so than what anybody else thought of what I'd done. That is how I survived.
And now, the man of the match thing is kind of a secondary thought in terms of that, because Clifford was amazing that day and I'm sure he's not bothered about things like that. But just the general point on the fact that he's so good, like these, and Scheffler something similar.
I fell into that completely.
But that's what the pressure of expectation is. And eventually that's what I suppose I had enough with. People just expect, regardless, especially when you're a jockey because you have to be riding the horses, but people just expect you to perform every day, and with that comes the pressure of expectation. That's what you end up with.
But the flip side of that, Ruby, and this is where I think we should be kind of not going overboard in terms of the praise, but those lads, the likes of Scheffler, the likes of David Clifford, yourself, Djokovic is another one who do it non-stop.
You're putting me in lofty company here, Al.
Well, it is, but that's the reality of it. But people who do it so often, so many times on the big day, and then we kind of, as you say, Willie Mullins, Aidan O'Brien, they just keep delivering. Mm. And then we kind of just not turn a blind eye, but you kind of go, well, sure, we're used to them doing that. But to still churn it out.
You become too accustomed to it and desensitized. Well, that's not the right correct word. It's not,
eventually,
not a bad thing, but...
Eventually, it gets to the other point. People root for the underdog until somebody gets so far, and then they just decide to think, wow, and they start cheering for the brilliance.
Yeah, it does get to the point where they want to see something different.
They wanted to split Dublin in half there not that long ago. Make two counties out of it. Now they talk about him as the greatest football team of all time. But when they were playing, people wouldn't speak of him that way, which is a little bit unfortunate. But which they should have spoken of. Like, they should have spoke of Limerick, as they did probably to an extent, as about the brilliant hurling team they were. Mm. It's to appreciate brilliance, because before you realise it, brilliance is gone.
Mm. And that's why I think Scheffler is amazing, by the way.
No, he is. And it's a strange thing that you wouldn't be teaching your son or your daughter taking up golf to swing like him or to do anything he does.
Yeah, it's the mentality, though, as well, Shane. Like, what he does upstairs, it's like whatever about technique, but why? And the more than yesterday, like I know there was a tactical element and the sweeper and all that, but those lads yesterday, the passion and the fire and the running power that those Tipperary lads played with, no end of scale, absolutely. But if you don't have the fire in the belly,
yeah. Speed. Sport is all about speed.
But sure, it doesn't matter. What does it mean? According to Scotty Scheffler, anyway, you know, it doesn't matter if you're winning all these things. There's more to life than sport, to Scotty Scheffler. I really enjoyed his comments over the weekend, I must say.
I love them as well.
Why? What caught your eye in particular to that?
I got it. And I couldn't understand when people were jumping up and down saying, oh, he's not appreciating what he's doing, and then people wanting him to be more, talk more. Scotty Scheffler is who he is. Scotty Scheffler's not the puppet who's going to come out in front of the media. He is the man he is. But I got what he says. Like, he kind of clarified it yesterday to an extent, but I got what he said on Friday. Or was it Friday or Thursday, whatever day he said it? Mm. Yeah, like, he loves what he's doing. But to him, what matters is the reason he's doing it, not why he's doing it. Mm. He's doing it because it's his job, and he's doing it the same as everybody else in the world is trying to do it to provide and create the life that you want to have. And once that life is good, that's what makes him happy. I kind of got what he was saying.
No, and I agree. You know, and he's bang on the money as well, wasn't it? Michael Parkinson, I think, in that of it's not war or debt or famine. You know, it's something much, it's besides all that. And that's why we love sport. And it is escapism. And Scotty Scheffler.
Some names right. Being bandied out here tonight. Michael Parkinson and everything.
I know, yeah. And that was my highlight, actually, the weekend, was Ireland. I think to watch yesterday, the flick from Portrush to Croke Park, and to think that we're a tiny little island and that's where we had on yesterday afternoon. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah.
That was definitely my highlight. The look of Croke Park and the atmosphere and the noise and the sight when the drone shot came on, or a helicopter, whatever they were using.
Yeah.
And you look at 82,000 people jammed in, and then you flick to Portrush when they put up an aerial shot and you see the amount of people strolling around Portrush. Like, it, to me, we're only a small island, and when you look at what we could put on in one day, I thought, yeah, that's my sport and highlight. That's what sport can do.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. And you know what, just to throw the League of Ireland aura in as well, it was great to see some of the regional grounds, Fairview Rangers and Limerick, Singland Park and everything, getting a bit of airing as well. No, and I mean that, sorry, I mean the half tongue-in-cheek, but also it is great to see the facilities that don't get the airing as much as others might
Before you skip on now, what was going to be your low light, Alan, you were going to get there?
Yeah, I don't really want to drag the mood down, but...
Because we're going to hurling next, so don't worry. Shane McGrath standing by to just uplift. You could say anything here, Alan, and he'll bring us back up.
It's more to pose a question, but it has to be said, I don't think... In other sports, yes, and the only one I could think of was Van de Velde, the golfer. Jimmy White beating Hendry, I think it was 16-7 in one of the snooker finals. But that must be up there with the biggest collapses that we've ever seen in sport from Cork yesterday.
Yeah. I was trying to hurriedly Google Liverpool-Milan Champions League final.
Because it was unbelievable. And the most amazing thing for me about it yesterday, whatever about Tipperary coming out and getting on top and being dominant and them having no answer to it, but they only scored 2 points in hurling. Like, it sounds impossible to do in the game of hurling.
It was like, do you know if you're standing, I don't know, on a boat or on the edge of a cliff, or you drop something that you know you're not going to catch again, and it falls to the ground and it takes 4 or 5 seconds, but you can see it going and drifting away from you. Watching the Cork players, it was like watching them lose. You could see them losing in All-Ireland and none of them could do anything about it. But it took 25 minutes and it just disappeared in front of them, and it was like they were nailed to the ground and they couldn't move or do anything about it. It was hard to watch, actually.
It was hard. And you know, one of the parts as well, do you remember where it cut to the management team? There was about six of them having a meeting and they looked lost. They were just bamboozled. But that's where I think the players, like, it's going to be hard for Pat Ryan, how you react to that and respond. And he's given so much and seems like such a really dignified man as well.
Seems absolute gentleman.
Yeah, everybody in the build-up and all the interviews and all that stuff that we've seen. And what we've seen over him over the last couple of years and what he's done for Cork hurling and getting them to two finals as well, it's been unbelievable. But looking at him yesterday and how he's going to respond to that is just, when you look at that meeting that they had, so-called, like the management team on the sideline. But that's where you need the players to react as well, Shane, on the pitch. Like, he can only bring them so far. But there was no response from the players.
They were shell-shocked.
It was like they couldn't. They didn't know what was happening and they just couldn't move. I'll tell you what I did think was a good thing today. I just happened to read that there's no homecoming for the Cork team. I was thinking, thank God somebody had the brains to save them from having to go and stand in Parky Cueve tonight. Because I know if I was on that pitch and I had big losses in my life, well, in sport, sorry, only in a sporting context, I definitely wanted to go and hide. So thank God they're letting Cork players go and hide.
Now, the only thing on the flip side of that is you would imagine the Cork public and sporting fans would have came out in their droves to congratulate them in what they've achieved. I know that it's a horrible place to be. You don't want to be up on stage, but they would support the team.
Of course they would. And they'd stand behind them. But I do think letting them go home and...
Yeah, none of the players would have wanted to go through that tonight. No.
Well, we spoke about parades a few weeks ago, and having parades and not having parades. They did have one last year when Clare beat them, but I know one thing, it's the last place any of them want to be tonight. So I thought it was a good thing.
And when we get to the hurling chat, I'm including in the analysis because I said it here on Friday night, the sweeper. And it just goes to show, right, and I'm going to say it here now, and it might be a harsh thing to say, how naive the Dublin manager was in that semi-final to go toe-to-toe with Cork and the game over after 10-15 minutes when you have a brilliant manager like Liam Cahill turn around at half-time and say we were settling for 3, 4, 5 points so that the game was still alive and we were still in the game and playing the sweeper and giving respect to the opposition what he was up against. So
naive or perhaps brave that he made that decision, Neil O'Callaghan. So we shall see. The Dubs might be back. No Cork homecoming. However, there is an ongoing Tipperary homecoming in Semple Stadium in Thurles, and we can cross live to now. Noel Moran also joins us on the line, but Shane McGrath is in Thurles for us. Well, Shane, what is the atmosphere like? Has it sunk in yet?
Well, lads, are we going? It's sinking in. There's great scenes here now in the moment at the stadium. The warm-up acts are getting going here. The two Johnnies are about to come on stage in a little while. But they're just looking out to the field here now. I hear the three kiddies and my wife and, you know, kids fucking around on the field, crowd up near the stage. Asher, look, it's just good for the soul. It's nobody could have seen, to be honest though, lads, not even the players themselves listening to do interviews this morning there when they were at the hotel. They couldn't even foresee what was going to happen yesterday. We all felt here we had a great chance because, you know, historically with Cork, we've played well against them, like, you know, albeit this year the league final we didn't set up properly for it. And Alan, I know you're saying it there with the sitting someone back across that forward line. I agree totally with you, and we were always going to do that. And I how Cork didn't react, I suppose we're still scratching our heads about that one, but we're delighted. But it's just, I suppose, the tip support, lads, they're a funny crowd in regards that they've just come out in their numbers and their thousands this year. They got behind this team. And it's nothing to do that they haven't supported teams in the past. But there's something different about this bunch. They're so young. We knew they'd be good, but we probably thought it wasn't going to be for another couple of years, to be honest. But it's just every time they're doing an interview, lads, they use the word pride, passion. They love playing for Tip. And these are 19 and 20-year-olds when they're doing the interviews. And I think the honesty they showed even that day below in Cork, when they went down to 14 men, they never give up the fight. And I tell you, lads, there's some crowd here already, and the team are going to be here for another maybe hour and a half. I'm saying it's going to be about 45,000-50,000 people. But look, that's the difference in winning and losing. They called off the one in Cork, and we're here tonight, and we're going to have 50,000 people to welcome him home and welcome Ronan Maher and watch him lift Liam McCarthy. It's is just unreal. No matter what you say or don't say here now, you're not going to dampen anybody's spirits if you say they're playing anyway.
Shane, does a top 20 10?
It does, yeah. It does, and that's... I actually saw him to Owen Kelly after the match with Larry, met a few more lads, Larry Egan, and we were talking about it, like, and even Liam Sheedy. And it does top 20 10 because of the context, Shane, is... We were actually in a really good place going into that final in 10 in regards to we were hurling well, we'd won leagues, we'd won Munster titles, and we'd gone toe-to-toe with Kenny the year before, and we knew that if we could get back there, getting back there was the hardest thing. But when we got back there, we knew, and I think a lot of people knew, we could do it. Whereas this year, if you're going on form and the context of what was coming into the game, like last year to be last in Munster, to be here in Seven Stadium, outnumbered 8-9-1 by the Cork fans, and the hammering we got... Like, a lot of people couldn't have foreseen just how well it got turned around. And I'd say, you know, the players themselves, I'd say they took on a lot more this year too in regards of their own individual performances, what they were doing on and off the field, how they were representing the jersey. I've heard them saying it there in the last couple of days as well. And, you know, it's for me, with all those things in place and with Cork and the form they were in, got into it, this is probably our best ever, yeah.
Shane, someone has to inspire people to have that pride and to want to do what they're doing. Does that fall with Liam Cahill?
I love Ruby, I tell you, he's taking a lot of slack now. And like, to be honest, he's probably got more slack from Tip than anywhere else because of the way things, I suppose, weren't going our way last year, right? Between one thing or another. And a lot of people might have criticised him for maybe overtraining the team and that maybe we were getting tired in games coming towards the end of the championship. And I suppose, you know, it's a results-driven industry, no more than any of your sports lads. And in Tip and hurling is number one. It's just passion for us. And when you're not winning, people are questioning everything. But this year, the way our fitness was never an issue. We were so fit in all the games. We looked physically stronger than Cork yesterday. And we never wilted in any of the games. And like the big game for me, Ruby, was actually down in Ennis against Clare. And unless you were actually there to realise how strong the wind was, Tony Kelly just scored a penalty and Shane O'Donnell had come on and everything was going Clare's way. And to see the resolve they showed that day, the steel they showed, and no doubt Liam Cahill was a massive factor in that. And like we had a coach, we had David Herity like in the coaching staff from Kilkenny, like our fiercest rivals. Like, and you know, for them, like I suppose for David, first of all, to put himself forward for the job. And secondly, for the management to take him on board, knowing that maybe someday David Herity will be involved in Kilkenny. But he's just wanting to learn all the time. But I think that's a testament to the management team as well to say, yeah, we feel you've something to offer. And, you know, I know the players have great time for David Herity, for Mikey Beebe, for Declan Laffin. But as you said, Liam Cahill, he was very emotional there in these interviews. I'm sure you heard him, lads, and rightly so. He's a proud, proud Tip man. And he's done something that less than a handful of people done in the GAA in terms of his coach, Tip to minor, under 20, under 21. And now senior success. And it's very, very special managers can do that, like.
Well, listen, we are going to hear from him now in just a few moments. Shane McGrath, thank you for joining us from Thurles. A massive congratulations to you and everyone from Tipperary as well. Really appreciate you taking the call. Enjoy the homecoming at Semple Stadium. Shane mentioned Liam Cahill there. We can hear from Ronan Marr and Liam Cahill speaking to Marty Morrissey this morning, and then we will be chatting to Niall Moran.
I'm joined by Ronan Marr and Liam Cahill, All-Ireland winning captain and manager. Can you put into words, a number of hours has clearly gone by, Liam Cahill, but considering what you've done, All-Ireland minor winning manager under 20, All-Ireland winning manager under 21, winning manager now senior. That's some CV, Liam Cahill, if I may say so.
Oh, Marty, I think it was just very fortunate to be born in Tipperary. look, just it's unique. You know, it's a personally, it's lovely. I'm really delighted to have achieved that. It was something, I suppose, that genuinely never entered my head, obviously, with the job in hand that had to happen yesterday. So, but yeah, it is nice. But I think I said it yesterday to one or two other people. They say Napoleon was a lucky general, so maybe I'm just the Napoleon of Tipperary.
I think you're being modest now, Liam Cahill, because this team has been transformed over this championship season. I know you quite well, and last year you were devastated when you didn't get out of Munster and you were trying to see how you could put the jigsaw together, but you did, on and off the field.
Yeah, Marty, there was a huge effort from everybody. You know, a lot of tough conversations, but you know, I suppose in the boardrooms with you know, the executive committee, the Tipperary County Board, and obviously then with ourselves as a management and coaching team, and then our players, obviously, who are were the real reason we're heading back down this morning to Turles with Liam McCarthy. And first, it started with them boys coming to the table with everything that was required, and we just got in behind him and supported him. And just, as I said, very fortunate to have a really, really genuine and honest bunch of players in Tipperary at this point in time.
And Ron and Mar, maybe that's a good cue for me to ask you, what's it been like with Liam Cahill in charge? What has happened? What's different from last year to this year?
Sure, listen, it's hard to put your finger on exactly what's different, but like we knew in the group that we had a total honest bunch of players, and it was just about getting it all out onto the field. And like, in fairness to the lads, they made changes here and there, and a lot of tough conversations, like I said before, and with players, with management team. And listen, there was a lot of hunger, obviously, and hurt from last year, and that's what drove us on. Like, and we know within the group that how good we're capable of playing, and just an unbelievable performance from everybody, and it was just a good, honest performance from everyone.
Did you see that performance coming in the second half?
Look, Marty, I suppose all week leading into the final, you know, Cork were obvious favourites, and rightly so, to be fair to them, league and Munster Championship champions, and, you know, a real formidable side, big athletic group of players. And it must have been really, really difficult for both management and players to manage down in Cork with that huge expectation as well. But to answer your question, at half time, 6 points down, we said they're going to come for the kill here, you know, immediately after half time. But credit to our boys in Tipperary, we came out, we stemmed the tide, got a foothold on the game, got a bit of oxygen, scoreboard brought it back to 2 or 3, and suddenly all of a shot you felt you had a real chance here. And then the likes of John McGrath and his composure, and just as if he's poking around the backyard at home, puts it into the back of the net and the whole thing takes off. Like, and, you know, big shout out as well, I suppose, our acknowledgement to Darren McCarthy for his performance on the day yesterday, after having quite a difficult year and coming off of that defeat in Cork in the second round of the Munster Championship. I'm so happy for him and so proud of him, the way he performed yesterday.
So proud of how many, so many people performed yesterday. Niall Moran joins us on the line. Niall, when Tipperary needed people to stand up and be counted, they had him in spades.
Yeah, wonderful occasion. Tough day where I'm living here now, Ruby. We're Bounds on Clare at one side, and Newport is right beside us in Tipperary. So we had to deal with it 12 months ago, and a little bit like Cork, we're having to deal with the fallout from our neighbours winning in All-Ireland. But look, you know, Tipperary, just they had leaders everywhere. None more so than the aforementioned John McGrath. Like, for a guy who, in the last four seasons, I think scored 4 goals, he ended this season with 7-16. And I just think, like, even there yesterday, like, there was people, would believe it or not, right behind me after half-time are saying John McGrath needs to be taken off. And I was saying, not a hope. Never, ever take off John McGrath. And, like, all of a sudden, he was 2-2, made another goal. Like, that is, he's just class personified. And his leadership. And I suppose then, at the other end of the scale, you mentioned Darren McCarthy. And it's amazing, like, how your day can just be in. His first score, it went to Hawkeye. It could have been an inch outside the post, and it might have set the tone for another poor day, but it slipped inside the post and got a couple of handy frees, and all of a sudden his confidence took off and he just got into a sense of flow. And look, I suppose in the analysis of this game, people are going to need to take two approaches to it. They're going to laud the Tipperary performance, and rightly so, or they're going to criticise the Cork performance. And I think for me, the capitulation was definitely more so to the overall capitulation, maybe not the overall result, but the overall capitulation was, it just gave me the sense that maybe Cork, with a half an hour left to go or 35 minutes left to go, they were looking for the finish line. And I suppose, look, that is a consequence sometimes of the scar tissue from losing All Ireland. And it just seemed, even in the first half, they definitely didn't play with the flow that they had, and like they were poxed to be 6 points up. Like, a drawn game at half time would have been a very, very fair reflection. And even people spoke about the sweeper. I just thought that Cork, like, because Cork knew what was happening. They knew that Brian O'Mara was flooding one side, and like, it's nearly 1-1 in terms of coaching there. Like, what you need to do there is you need to work the ball. Like, they've been given a spare man full back line. You have to just work it out, work it through the lines. But I think they were completely inhibited after 10 minutes by fear of failure, and nobody wanted to take the responsibility to make that big play. And what I was amazed in real time, and I don't think it was picked up even last night in the Sunday game, Cork for a lot of the game actually went 5-on-5 in their own backs. So, like, ordinarily what happens obviously with a sweeper is that one team will have 7-on-6 and the opposition now will be left with a situation where they're 6-on-5. But Cork, after about 10 or 12 minutes from where I was, my vantage, they set up orthodox for puckers, but then they just pushed up. And the only time that they really got changed from that was obviously Rob Downey popped up in the lead up to the goal for Shane Barrett. And I would have said, hey, okay, now they're pushing up. But
in the second half, when tactically, when they look back on it, as well as all the psychological element. Like, Owen Downey, he had very, very little cover in front of him, and he was forced into a situation where he kind of had to play John McGrath in front, and that left the door open for him to win the back. So, psychologically, yes, there'll be a big focus on it, but tactically as well, they just got it really wrong against what is essentially a basic tactical concept in today's game. Like,
Niall, can I ask from the psychological aspect, and Alan, you'll enjoy this actually, apart from Sligo text in, don't forget the tip, psychologist is a Sligo man, Cathal Sheridan. How important do you feel, when you look at the composure that Tip had, the halftime speeches from both management teams to the respective panels, how important is it that Tip had men in there with All-Ireland medals in the back pocket?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose it allowed for cool heads, like, you know, and none more so than Liam Cahill, like, you know what I mean? As a player, obviously very, very experienced. But I just really think, irrespective of what was said in the court dressing, like, when you go into that cauldron, you are left on your own, and it's a very, very lonely place, and tide is going against you. And trust me, we've been on those hammerings, and Ruby said there earlier on about the pressure of expectation. And for me, I suppose, looking at it, is when you've been scarred, and so, like, that Cork team contained seven of the first eight that played in 21. They all played again yesterday, and that doesn't leave you. Like, when you lose big games, that stays with you for a very, very long time, and you can try and plaster over it and have good leagues and various semi-finals and quarter-final performances, but ultimately, until you have to cross that Rubicon to do something that you've never done before, that's only when you know if the scar tissues are healed. And for me, like, I just think, and I was being alluded to, like, the confidence just seeped out of Cork after Hoggy's free. And it's not really fair to put all that blame on a guy like Patrick Horgan, but I suppose the reality of the situation was a similar situation occurred last year with a chance to go 8 up against Cork. And within 15, 20 minutes, Clare had them level. And again, yesterday, 10 minutes after that, Cork found themselves in their rears. And, like, it is very, very hard when you've had that scar tissue to try and break through it. And you can talk about psychologists, you can talk about coaches, you can talk about everything else that you want. Ultimately, it's you and the 6 inches, you know, between your ears. And I just think for Cork, that's where the shock came, and that's where the inept performance really came from. And, like, did an element of complacency deep, deep down set in to copper fasten it? I definitely think so. And it's very, very hard to guard against that in an amateur or professional environment. And look, I suppose that's what Cork have to pour over. Like, you can look at the numbers, and the numbers don't make for pretty reading. But, like, what do you do if you're Pat Ryan here now? Like, do you jump ship? I don't think you jump ship. I think he's done an exceptional job. There were, like, you know, their performances are still among the best of any county this year. Maybe you just probably have to pour through some of your personnel, and maybe there has to be slight changes. And look, there is a bedrock of youth coming through with success from Cork as well, and maybe he'll just have to maybe copy that model from Liam Cahill and just say, hey, we need 4 or 5 changes here, lads. Thanks very much, you've been brilliant servants, and we go on. And look, that process starts now as well, lads. Like, that's, you can't pour over that for the winter, because if you leave it open, that wound open for a long time, it's going to fester and people are going to turn on you. And I just think they have to be public, they have to address it, let it be open wound for now, and the sooner you kind of go towards healing it, the sooner you get over it, and next year it'll come around very quickly for them.
Niall, just listening to you, it sounds very much like fear. Youth knows no fear. Tipperary had no fear. Cork almost had a fear of losing. Like, do teams give youth enough opportunity? It was forced upon Tipperary. Should more teams be looking at the fearlessness of youth?
Yeah, obviously in an ideal world, when you haven't been successful, you would say that. But sure, like, the obvious thing there, Ruby, is why hold on to a man like Noel McGrath? Or why would you hold on to John McGrath and Mikey Breen and guys who you'd have said over the last couple of seasons, okay, they have an awful lot done, their legs are going, we have an influx of youth. But I suppose it's probably trying to find that mix. I know it's cliched, but, like, for Tipperary, they didn't get it right day one here either. And, like, I know Shane alluded to earlier, and obviously there, lads, kudos to you for getting them on air as well. I thought to get a sober Shane McGrath at a Tipperary homecoming. All right, I tell you, you have more pulling power than I thought you had. But like, what I'm trying to say there is, Liam Cahill made changes mid-year, like, and none more so than the goalkeeper. It's your quarterback in hurling, and it's a major, major call to make. And he made those changes. Andrew Orman came in, like Robert Doyle, obviously, earlier on in the year. And look, when you've had that, like, failure like that, and the way the Cork has, you do probably have to freshen it up a little bit. And But also then you run the risk that you're getting rid of quality players that you mightn't be able to replace them with. So ultimately, for anybody trying to find a potion for success, it does come through underage here. And like a lot of the alludes that the shock win of Tipperary, but in the last 12 months, you must remember that Tipperary were All-Ireland minor champions last year. They're All-Ireland under 20 champions. They're All-Ireland colleges champions. Even Shane McGrath won an All-Ireland Masters medal. Even the Rowell fellas are winning things. So, to be honest, the way they were going, like, do you know what I mean? Maybe we were fools not to see it. But look, sometimes it's your day as well. And that might sound very simple and very an ignorant comment to make, but like in the second half, like Cork hit the post three times. Ball came across the square. It could have nearly hit Reece Shelley and went back in. Do you know what I mean? There was a break there, obviously, for Patrick Collins bringing the ball down. It ended up in a goal. Like, Reece Shelley did the very same thing against Kilkenny, and it won him the game. Like, they beat him at the fine margins, like, you know. And, like, it's just for Tipperary, I suppose, the one thing. I found myself shouting for Tipperary now yesterday as well, lads, right? I hope my own county can forgive me, but we're embedded with Tipperary blood here. But the one thing that I do know is, when you have a county team, and I know Jim McGuinness often referenced it, you play for your county. You play for who you are. Every county has a very, very different DNA. Every county is defined by very, very different things. And I know as a child, going up and down on my holidays home to Tipperary and watching them as underage, watching them in the 80s through the 90s when Limerick never had success, like you were always, it was always about pride. It was always about resilience, resolve, toughness. And then those innate traits were always kind of, they were cultured by the skill level that came from playing the game. And all those came out in spades for Tipperary. And I think the fan base, they reconnected with who they were. And again, sport is funny. Sport is, as Scotty Scheffler said, it's only a part of life and there's more to life than sport. But it epitomises who you are and who your county is. And it gives everyone a sense of pride in themselves for the next 6 or 12 months. And that won't just be seen on sports fields. Like, that's seen in business, that's seen in education, that's seen in everything that you go to do. And I just think for Tipperary, you could just see the pride in who they were coming out. And you know what? They mightn't have won yesterday, and that still could have come out in the way that they performed. But just everything went away yesterday, and they got that to go with it.
Very well put. Niall Moran, thank you for joining us this evening, and indeed thank you for joining us every Monday that there has been some championship hurling on, and even the league as well. You're an absolute gentleman. Really appreciate you taking the call today. So massive congratulations to everyone from Tipperary, and a sincere commiserations to anyone tuning in from Cork. It was a remarkable season, albeit coming up a bit short, but Pat Ryan and the players done an incredible job. We're turning our attention to rugby after the break, and we will be chatting a bit of soccer with Alan Colley a little bit later, but Stephen Ferris is standing by to chat line. Stick with us here in Game On.
Game On Rugby.
Now, Stephen Ferris joins us to chat rugby. Before we chat rugby, though, Stephen Ferris, it looked amazing from the television when myself, Ruby and Alan were watching on. Most importantly, how was Portrush?
Yeah, it was pretty good now. Pretty spectacular. Looking at the weather forecast this day, sort of last week, everybody was apprehensive that it was going to be a bit of a washout, and it wasn't. The weather was so kind. Yes, a few heavy showers on Friday, a little bit of mizzle on Thursday morning, but apart from that, it was glorious, and it looked that way on the TV screens as well. So I went Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then sat in front of the TV Friday, Saturday, nursing a bit of a hangover.
Well, that means you got to watch the rugby. So, news today now is that Joe McCarthy, Matt Hansen both set out training in Melbourne this morning, but the Lions are hopeful the Ireland duo will be available for Saturday's second test against Australia. Hansen missed the first test against Wallabies due to a foot injury. McCarthy also has been troubled by a painful foot issue as well, and departed the win on Saturday early in the second half. We have a team named for tomorrow's match against the First Nations and Pacifica 15 at 11 a.m. Irish time. In terms of Irish contingent, we have Jamie Osborne, Josh van der Fleer, Finlay Beelam, James Ryan all start, Thomas Clarkson and Gary Ringrose on the bench. Before we look ahead, what stood out for you from the weekend's test?
I think first of all, the British and Irish Lions, they had a big job to do, and I think they got the job done with ease. I was watching it, and it just felt like that. Yes, the intensity was there. There wasn't a lack of intensity, but it did feel a little bit flat. And I know that everybody has been talking more about the atmosphere and what was sort of expected going into the game, rather than two half decent teams or two very good teams going head to head. And obviously the British and Irish Lions in Brisbane
had a brilliant 60 minutes and sort of put the game to bed. And you're almost waiting for this huge fight back to happen, but it never really did. And it always felt that the British and Irish Lions had another gear to go. And now they really got to step it up next week and, you know, fire a few more shots and see what they can get out of the game. But you have to say it's been pretty good by Andy Farrell and the coaching staff and all the players there. They've got the team going in the right direction, especially after that very first defeat, if we can all remember back to that, against Argentina down in Dublin. So, 1-0.
From an Irish point of view, Stephen, Jack Conan, Joe McCarthy, Tadhg Furlong, rock solid. Jebson Gibson Park, Dan Sheehan, Tadhg Byrne, brilliant. But James Lowe and Hugo Keenan, will they be sweating a bit this week after what went on at the weekend?
Yeah, quite possibly. And you know, there's always going to be a few injuries and a few niggles picked up, and you just never know what's around the corner. You just got to keep yourself fresh. You got to keep yourself switched on. And I thought the Irish continued have been, as you said, Ruby, rock solid. They've been very, very good. And you know, with a couple of guys who've been given an opportunity now in the middle of this week, you know, you got to be saying that, you know, got to really go hard, try and be creative, but also, as Andy Farrell keeps banging the drum, it's all about the team. Everything is about the team, and we'll wait and see. But yeah, it's been a really positive start by all the Irish lads that have been in the mix for the British and Irish Lions, and hopefully that can continue over the next couple of weeks.
With a bit of luck, it will. Did you think watching the weekend that the Scottish pair, Hugh Jones and Sione Tiopolotu, they're going to keep Gary Ringrose and Bundy Aki out, aren't they?
Do you want my honest opinion, or do you want me to give you a shout off air, Ruby?
I want your honest opinion.
Yeah, you know, you always get that with me. I think before, obviously, Gary Ringrose took that bit of a head knock, I think it was going to be Bundy Aki and Gary Ringrose, and obviously that has flipped over. But Hugh Jones has been impressive. To Pilato, obviously scored a good try at the weekend. I just feel that Hugh Jones is potentially a little bit not greedy, but you know, he doesn't like to throw that extra pass, and you know, that 50-50 offload that you'd maybe see Brian O'Driscoll, you know, a little bit of magic. Yes, he has pace, he has the ability to score tries, as he has shown over the last number of weeks, but I just think that Gary Ringrose is just a bit more solid maybe in the midfield, and is able to make better defensive reads, because you can be damn sure that this Australian side are going to have to throw a lot more at them, and especially in the wider channels if they're going to score a few more tries. And maybe Gary Ringrose is that guy to shut that down. But you got to say, fair play to Hugh Jones. He's come in alongside his Scotland teammate and Sione Tuipulotu, and they've looked half decent having in the midfield, and pretty rock solid. But yeah, I'm just, you know, obviously a little bit disappointed that Gary Ringrose wasn't given the opportunity to fight for his place and be fit and ready to go for that first test.
How important is relationships? Because Michael Corcoran touched on this last week, that would it be a case, or would you agree that if Ringrose starts, Aki starts, and it's about kind of building those partnerships?
I'm not so sure. Like, I know for me personally, obviously, talking about a back row, and you do get familiarise yourself with certain individuals, and obviously there was myself, Jimmy Heaslip and Sean O'Brien, who you know, played together quite often in the Green of Ireland, and you do sort of know each other's traits a little bit more, what somebody's potentially a lot better at than you are, and you know, when to make the right decisions. And you know, I think when you've got a good combination or a good trio, it certainly adds to that. I think to Pilato and Hugh Jones, it was on the lips of everybody before the Lions tour kicked off that it could potentially be this combination. But as the time went on, it sort of felt that Bundy Aki was going to be Andy Farrell's man in the 12 jersey. So that gave Gary Ringrose, you know, an even bigger chance to get that 13 jersey. But yeah, I have to agree with Michael Corcoran. I do think combinations and trios will go a long way. And especially you look at somebody like Josh van der Fleer, could there be a change or in the back row? Well, you have to say the three lads that started at the weekend were absolutely excellent, and you know, really bounced off each other well, didn't they? In their specific jobs that they were able to do. And I'm not too sure there's going to be that many changes for the second test.
Yeah, with that in mind, who needs a big performance tomorrow? Will Hugo Keenan be trying to count how many minutes Blair Kinghorn is going to be playing and so on?
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah. Obviously, Owen Farrell at 12. Like, if he goes out and has an absolute blinder, man of the match, he's captain as well. I think Duane van der Merwe.
Owen Farrell a bolter for a test match?
Well, I'm not going to say he's not going to get a chance. Like, I could see him definitely getting onto the bench. Maybe test three, and you know, another game to go. Potentially another injury, and you just never know. He does have that experience. Personally, I wouldn't be picking him on the bench, especially if somebody like Mark Hansen comes back in fit. But yeah, I thought Ben White actually played really well. The chance that he got in the last game before the first test match. And obviously, you know, in the back row, Jack Morgan, Van der Fleer and Pollock. I think that's a cracking back row. It's so athletic and a lot of pace and a lot of enthusiasm in that back row. But yeah, and maybe one of our other Irish guys in Finlay Beelam, who hasn't really put a foot wrong, but might struggle to get a test spot or a test cap at some stage during this tour. But yeah, that's the couple of guys that I would look out for, and especially Blair Kinghorn. If he goes well, I'm sure he'll be given a chance to wear the test jersey with number 15 on the back at some stage.
That'll be tight for Hugo Keane. And Stephen Ferris, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us this evening. I'm glad you enjoyed Royal Port Rush. We've another quick break to bake and maybe to take even, and we'll be back to talk soccer with Alan Cawley.
Game on. Association football.
Back to Game On. Just reading here, Alan, England captain Leah Williamson is fit and available to play against Italy tomorrow night against Italy in the Euro semi-final. What way will that go?
Yeah, I just saw that news earlier, and that's a big boost, Ruby, because if you saw the injury that she picked up in the game, she went over on her ankle and it looked like one of those where it certainly looked like maybe ligaments or something, and she tried to play on, and I think she got an extra 2-3 minutes before realising this is too sore, and they took her off. And I thought that could have been, whether England won or not, that could have been the end of the tournament for her. Obviously they went on to win, as we know now, but that's a massive boost because she's a brilliant player, and they've had a couple of struggles at centre back as well. The girl that plays alongside her, Carter, she struggled in the last game against Black Stenhouse, the Swedish centre forward, particularly with her pace, Ruby. Everything over the top was a real kind of challenge and struggle for her, because Black Stenhouse was very quick and it caused all sorts of problems in Sweden. So Leah Williamson is like their kind of leader, and that kind of presence at the back, if you like. So that's a big boost for them. How will it go? I think Italy have been really good in the tournament, but I think this is just one step too far against England. I'd be shocked if England can't get by Italy. And they've made hard work of the game so far, England. As we know, they haven't hit the heights that we'd kind of expect. But I do think they're on the good side of the draw in this regards in the semi-final. And even though Italy will bring plenty of fight and passion, as we all know with the Italians, I think this is just a step too far.
So England, Italy tomorrow evening, 8 p.m. Germany, Spain on Wednesday. Elsewhere in football news, the European draws, Alan, were conducted today for League of Ireland sides. So should Shelburne defeat Carabag, which is a very tall order, they will play Romanian side FCSB, the artist formerly known as Steaua Bucharest, or Macedonia's KF Shkendia in the next round. More realistic for Shelburne is that they lose to Carabag and will be playing either Croatia's Rijeka or Ludogorets of Bulgaria. So a tough test in the Europa League third qualifying round. If St. Pat's overcome Nomkalju of Estonia, well, talk about tough tests. Besiktas or Shakhtar Donetsk?
I saw that. And when you contrast that to what Shamrock Rovers have, if they come through, go on.
So they
win,
they'll get Balkany of Kosovo or Floriana of Malta if they beat St. Joseph's of Gibraltar.
And of course, they're the seeded team, so you'd expect a favourable draw. But it's a big, big ask for St. Patrick's Athletic. Now, I think they'll beat the Estonian team, even looking at them. They're fourth in the league at the moment in Estonia. They won 6-2 at the weekend, but as I said, they are fourth in their domestic league and they don't score a hell of a lot of goals. I think in 21 matches they've only scored 43 goals, so I would expect St. Pat's to come through that. But of course, it's a huge ask, and a glamour tie against the likes of Shakhtar Donetsk, but I don't see them going any further. Whereas I think you look at Shamrock Rovers and you look at the route Shelburne, the champions route, it's an unbelievable addition to Irish football, yeah. Shane, and in terms of what's on offer and the financial reward now, as we know, which is whether you're the Europa League, the Conference League, it's similar to what you'd be getting in the Champions League. It's unbelievable. It's game-changing money, it is, for our league. And the fact that there's routes realistic routes through to knockout stage football, I think it's incredible, and it's going to change the face of the game here, and it's going to change the face of individual players as well in terms of their earning potential and what they can get from these bonuses, which is great to see. But certainly the introduction of the Conference League for countries like ourselves and similar sizes around, and we're trying to be more progressive than some of the, even the countries that you're kind of pitting your wits against, I think it's a huge addition and it's brilliant for Irish football.
Yeah, David Snyder at the 42, that he had a really good article on that actually as well. I think Sean Boyd said it's the difference of getting a deposit for a house.
That's
life changing for a League of Ireland player.
The realism of it, Shane, it really is.
Speaking of big money, Liverpool have struck a deal with Eintracht Frankfurt worth up to €90 million for Hugo Ekitike. A good move for Liverpool? Worth €90 million?
Well, the money nowadays is Mbeumo worth 70. Like, we could debate them here all day, Shane. And there was a time when I used to get annoyed over price tags. I've come to accept that's just the world we live in now. But I think in terms of the quality of the player, I think he's a very good signing. On top of what they've brought in already with Kirkez at left full, they're really strengthening Liverpool on top of winning the league as well. So it's looking ominous for the other teams. Now, Arsenal have obviously brought in a couple. United have brought in a couple. But I think those signings from Liverpool are real kind of statement signings.
Okay. More transfer news to pick through tomorrow with Paul Corrie and Mark Langdon. Just before we finish up as well, we did mention at the top of the show briefly, Alan, was the Sports Direct Men's FA Cup second round. Fairly one-sided encounters. The draw for the third round is tomorrow, 12:30 on the FA YouTube channel. Paul Corrie made this point, and I'm aware we've only got 30 or so seconds
left. His tweet last night.
Yeah, I know the regional divisional side, they're out of season as such, but it's not a great advertisement for a potential third tier.
No, I would agree with Paul totally. And if we're kind of putting our resources into manufacturing a third tier, I think the resources should be going into trying to make the first division the best possible league it can be, because there, you look at Longford struggling against Castlebar Celtic, so there's plenty
cracker of a match, 9-0 thriller.
Yeah, but there's plenty of first division teams who I think need help in terms of facilities and resources and to be brought up to a level that maybe, and I include the Premier Division teams, we're nowhere near the finished article as well in that regard, Shane. So to pit all your kind of effort and resources into trying to create another league. Now, it will broaden it out geographically, but just in terms of, you mentioned it was great to see some of those kind of regional
grounds. Singland Park.
But fences around them, that's old school stuff, yeah. Shane, you know, like it's going to take some work to get them up to the level of what you want.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a purist, Alan. I'm all for grassy knolls and fences around football pitches. Myself and Ruby will be back here tomorrow on Game On from 6 p.m. where Mark Langdon and Paul Carr will have the latest in summer transfer news. We're reflecting Scotty Scheffler's powerful win at Portrush, and we'll check in on the Tour de France. It was a rest day today, of course, in Montpellier, and we'll hear from the Lions Tour down under. Up next here on 2FM is a new music show with Dermot O'Brien. Do not go anywhere. We're going to check in with the news desk first. For myself and Ruby, Ronan Lawler, our producer, Laura Lee Davis, our broadcast coordinator, it is bye-bye. Have a great evening.